Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
This is OTB Sports Radio.
United fans will always love Damien Delaney for his goal that started the Palace comeback in the 3-3 draw with Liverpool. That is from Martin.
Yeah, I love United fans as well. You know, I've got nothing personally against anyone.
It's just business. It's just business.
It's an opinion.
It's just business. It's just business. You're just saying that, you know, you don't think United
will win. With the agenda. Call it what it is.
That's what I like Man United. I want to see them dominate again. I want to see them back on top.
Off the Ball, Saturdays from 1 on OTB Sports Radio. Listen live on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Hi, you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock. Now, because we're bringing you live commentary of Munster versus Toulouse from 3, OTB Football Saturday is happening now. So we're joined by the former Republic of Ireland international David Myler, football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonnell, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to talk about the beautiful game, football and off the ball. Thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. You can text us 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. You could watch us as well on the social channels for Off the Ball, for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download the app if you haven't not already. Chelsea won, West Brom 2 at half time in the Premier League. So Chelsea went in front with Pulisic scoring. Then Thiago Silva was sent off for a second yellow card. And in first half stoppage time, Matheus Pereira has scored twice for the Baggies. They're going down. But Chelsea, this is not a given, this Champions League football next season. And Thomas Tuchel could be heading for his first defeat as manager. We'll keep you right up to date with what's happening at Stamford Bridge in the second half. Lads, hope it's all is good and happy Easter and all that.
Same to you, JD.
The dust settling now. We've had a time to take a breath and consider what's happened over the last 10 days. It feels like 20 years since it was a Premier League game. After the Serbia, Luxembourg and Qatar matches for the Republic of Ireland. What's your considered view now, lads, now the dust is settling? David, I want to start with you. How do you feel after what you've seen over the last couple of weeks?
I've had a lot of time to reflect on it. I was on Sunday morning after the Luxembourg game, and I was very... probably critical of individuals after listening to Stephen speak, but players wanting to play for the jersey. And I kind of said, I need to see more. It kind of felt that wasn't the case in the game. I think I was a bit harsh in that, you know, like you're looking back on it now and it's very interesting. Like I've done a bit of looking and a bit of researching on it. You know, there was an interesting thing from Brian Kerr where he spoke about this was inevitable. This is always going to happen because there's a problem in the underage and bringing players through and what have you. Now I'm involved myself with the Irish under 17s. I've seen some of the work firsthand. It's quite interesting. If you look at the age of the team, you've a lot of like, if you've Seamus who's, you know, gone 32, you've McLean, then you have like say Brady, Hendrick, you know, they're pushing on to 30. Then there's a massive drop off down to, you know, these young lads like Knight, Malumbi, Daryl Shea, Travers, Zunu, all them, they're all the bones of 19, 20, 21. So there is a massive gap. So I think there has to be someone, like somewhat patience with Stephen because there's not the middle ground players, those, you know, those 24, 25, 26-year-olds that have, you know, a lot of experience of playing like maybe 100, 150 games in, you know, senior men's football. So I think... at this stage, not to like write off the World Cup group. I'm not for that. But I think there has to be a bit of, you know, a leeway because it is a massive transition. I think that is the case. You know, we are developing players, but I definitely think, you know, to see it, it's going to take time because these young lads are very young and we've got no kind of middle ground players to kind of keep us ticking along nicely.
Dan, your considered view?
Yeah, I think they're great points that David makes. I mean, I think like the cycle around an Irish game, sometimes the reaction to it Like, there's always an extreme of reaction. It's like some big, you know, wild big night out or something, and everyone like loses their
own themselves. What's a wild big night out? I can't remember what
used to exist back, you know. And like, I think the 24 hours after a big defeat, everyone's sort of still caught up in the moment. And then you sort of sleep in it and you think about it and you're like, okay, and you know, you look at it. And it doesn't excuse that the fact that, listen, the performance against Luxembourg was terrible. It was lethargic and flat, and you can't just make excuses forever. Like, it was bad. But I think David does touch on a very important point there about the makeup of the squad. Now, I will say as well that, like, you know, other managers would have obviously received a lot of criticism for a similar performance, and it doesn't just excuse Stephen. And in fact, there might have been a view that Stephen was taking over at a very good time because there's a good generation of players coming through. It just so happens that maybe, I think there was a very interesting line from Kenny himself after the game on Tuesday in Qatar, or sorry, against Qatar, where he spoke about the young players he brought through, and then he threw in a line, and it didn't really get reported that much because obviously he had his defiant speech, which took a lot more attention. But he had a line with something along the lines of, you know, well, and maybe not all of them are ready yet. And maybe it's taken him, you know, 11 games or a year or whatever, 6 months, whatever timeline you want to put in it, to maybe 100% find that out. I mean, it is a striking generational thing. Like, basically, like, in terms of homegrown players born between the years of 1993 to 1998, so Irish-produced players, there's none in the Premier League at the moment. And they will be the players that will be like 22 to 27, sort of that prime of their career now. And that Euro 2016 squad, the last major tournament Ireland were at, and obviously, you know, that sort of, you know, David's sort of generation of players and his lads when he was around the group. So you had the 1992 players in that, Shane Duffy, Robbie Brady, Jeff Hendrick, and, you know, Matt Doherty wasn't in the squad at that stage, but he's 1992. And Ireland were the oldest team in the tournament. In fact, they were the oldest team at Euro 2012 as well. And they were almost hanging on to that group, you know, even the tail end of the Robbie John O'Shea sort of generation, Shea Given. And there was always a fear, even in 2016, okay, well, where's the outstanding, you know, players of the next age down? And it hasn't really happened. In fact, the players that have broken through in the last couple of years and really established themselves are the likes of John Egan. It just took John Egan a while to come through. Conor Harahan as well, who was like 1991, you know, and took him a while to get there. Enda Stevens, similarly, 1990. And what you have is a situation where there's that middle rump of the team. I mean, Neil O'Riordan and the Sun had this stat during the week, and it is very striking. And I know that Dublin is not the centre of the world, but generally Dublin, like, you know, will always be supplying a certain amount of players to our squad. And the only players born in Dublin between 1993 and 1998 to be capped for Ireland are Jack Byrne and Graham Burke, both of whom were playing in the League of Ireland last year, and Graham Burke still is. So clearly, I think that's an important point to make as well, that the FAI in recent years have made a decision to direct the underage resources or the responsibility towards the League of Ireland clubs. Now, it has to be said that just around the time that transition was taking hold, we've then seen a really good generation of schoolboy players come through, produced by schoolboy clubs such as Dara O'Shea, Jason Knight, Troy Parrott, all these players, the 2001, 2002 born players. Gavin Bazunu is a bit different. He's a Shamrock Rovers story, but others from that chain. But what you must say as well, in balance, that clearly things weren't working for 5 or 6 years prior to then another generation of good players coming through. So clearly there was a problem there that needed fixing, but maybe the way they went about fixing it wasn't correct. And it didn't involve some, you know, as put noses out of joint of some established schoolboy clubs. But sorry, listen, that's a bit of a roundabout answer. But I guess what we're saying is that it's not straightforward, and it's clear that there's two generations within that Irish dressing room, and we're waiting for the younger one to take over from the older one, but there's going to be some tricky times. And really, from all my work, and all I can do is like speak to people and get a vibe on the ground, I do think there is patience, there is time will be given to Stephen Kenny. I don't believe that, you know, his job is on the line or anything like that. He doesn't have a free pass forever, but I think the people making decisions will be quite understanding of the equation we've laid out there.
Johnny, like myself, and I'm a believer in what Stephen Kenny is about as a football man. When you watched the Luxembourg game, how did you feel?
It was tough, JD, to be honest. Like, it was one of the most kind of despondent I've been in terms of after any sporting event, really. And I was listening to the radio on Sunday, and I was listening to David, and I suppose the first thing that came to my mind was, I'm just glad I'm not on the radio talking about Ireland today, because I was very deflated afterwards. I thought you were harsh, David. I know you referenced it now in terms of the hunger of the players. I don't think it's that. I just think that they were sort of mentally fatigued. And I did speak about this in the build-up to the game. I felt if Ireland came to the game last Saturday on the back of a defeat in Serbia, I didn't think Lansdowne Road would be any benefit to them whatsoever, whereas Luxembourg would come there with no crowds and they would feel like they didn't have much to lose. And I think that it weighed on the Ireland players mentally. I wasn't at the game, but from the reports I read, it was kind of obvious from the audio pitch of the players as the game went on that they were getting very anxious. And you're thinking, as the second half develops, and this is going to be bad, nil all against Luxembourg, even though a draw wouldn't have been a massive surprise, in terms of what Luxembourg have achieved and in terms of our recent results. It was no gimme whatsoever that we'd beat Luxembourg, but I don't think any of us really countenanced defeat. And I was worried about Stephen Kenny, just watching his body language in the last 5 to 10 minutes. I got thinking, what's he going to say to them in the dressing room? Because this is a really, really crucial moment in terms of his relationship with his players, because he has to go in and give some sort of a reaction. And I did read some reports that he was pretty quiet in the dressing room initially after the game, and that Keith Andrews did a lot of the talking. Now, he came out defiant after the Qatar game. I don't think Stephen Kenny is necessarily at his most convincing when he's under pressure, which he clearly is now, but there wasn't much else for him to say. He has to be defiant. We can probably talk today or another time about the whole World Cup thing in Qatar, and I suppose the fact that Ireland won't be there, it's not the worst World Cup to miss and all that, but we do now have a chance to basically blood players through this group, because the group is effectively over for us. We have very little chance of qualifying, and that generational gap is there. The players that I've spoken about, the golden generation, maybe I was guilty of bigging them up too much. Troy Parrott hasn't made the progress yet, at the very least, so we would have expected. I think that's been evidenced in his Ireland performances as well. He is a bit off, and Stephen Kenny probably referenced that himself, as Dan said. Daryl O'Shea taken off today. He's had a very busy time, but I think he's going to be a big player. But I do feel that the loss of Egan and the goalkeeper situation really, really hurt us in Serbia, and Stephen Kenny's had an awful lot to deal with. I just hope he can build from this, and I hope those players can make the progress that we kind of envisage, because it hasn't really happened for if you look at Ida, Parrott, Connolly, and some of the others, Malumbi, to a lesser extent, some of the defenders, they haven't really made the progress yet in a very, very difficult globalised English Premier League or English football system that we'd hope for. And it'll be interesting to see how we finish the group, because if we go through the group and don't make any progress, obviously Stephen's job will be under extreme pressure. But I think those young players just have to make a bit of progress under him in the remaining games and show that we're getting somewhere, because at the moment we're not.
A new year is full of surprises. But one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com code PROGRAM.
I'm just curious, David, on the ex-pros, Richard Dunn, Tony Cascarino, Paul McGrath, all very critical of Stephen Kenny. Should they lay off this early, or is he fair game?
He has to be fair game, I suppose. It's a massive job. He's under no disillusion. Stephen knows that. I just feel some of them are watching from afar. I think Richie Dunne will obviously be on the cusp. He'll, like, he's into it. He'll be very intrigued and very interested. But like I listen to Tony Cascarino. It's like, you know, they don't know what's going on all the time. They kind of turn on the match before it, watch the game, and then kind of go, this is awful. You know what I mean? And it's, if you had just turned on Ireland v Luxembourg, you're going, well, this isn't great. You know what I mean? This is an awful Irish performance. What's the manager doing? This fella's come in. He said he's going to do this, that, and the other. And it's not happened. So I think they're like Stephen said, you know, I loved his post-match after Qatar because there was a bit of passion and a bit of hunger in it. And I love stuff like that. I love when, you know, he says, I don't care what these people are saying, because a lot of it is fellas coming out of the woodwork. He's right. Like, it's fellas that are, you know, Tony's on talks board or whatever, I hear him most days because I'm living in England. But then again, I'm involved because, look, I know a lot of these lads. I'm intrigued. I want to see Ireland do well, everything. I know what the day-to-day basis are. I speak to lads who are in the camp that I'm still close with, how they're getting on the training, you know, the stuff that they're doing. They're all, you know, speak highly of Stephen. They speak well of, you know, Keith and Anthony and that. So it's just outside noise. But like, the one thing they don't see is like what we're talking about with the, you know, the transition of these groups. And I think the big thing is, if you look at it, every manager before Stephen, whether it be Mick, Martin or Giovanni, they were all brought in to get results and get us to tournaments. I think with Stephen, there's a bigger picture in place. I think they're looking at the overall development of the younger age and everything. I think there is a bigger picture. I want to believe there is a big picture anyway. And I think he deserves certainly enough time to, you know, implement his style and try and get it to transition through all the age groups, which we've seen, like the lads, like Dan had some, you know, lovely stats there on players in the years. Like, it was obviously a problem years ago, but now we're, you know, we're reaping the benefits of these young lads coming through the 15, 17s, 19s. That's testament to, you know, Rue Docker, and then obviously all the coaches, whether it be Jason Donoghue, Colin O'Brien, you know, Tom Mohan, those fellas are getting players into the 21s. It's now like, we need to see those probably, like as Johnny said there, those players aren't kicking on as much as we'd like to see them kick on, but at the same time, they are still relatively young. Like,
yeah, I think like it's, there's layers to the criticism. I think in fairness, I mean, Richard Dunne has, you know, I think some of his stuff has been very interesting. Even after Serbia, like he sort of went into detail about, say, the 3-5-2 in that game and maybe how Ireland shouldn't have conceded some goals from central positions. And I think that they're all very valid criticisms. I think some of the other stuff, it is a bit like we have an issue sometimes in this country that we're very obsessed with, like, you know, what England thinks of us. And I think aspects of the criticism have been people who have not necessarily tuned into it, looking at the stats, having won in 11, well, there you go, this is a disgrace. And it's as though everything, all things are equal, and that the results here are, you know, have to be measured completely against the results of previous managers working in different circumstances. And to be honest, I don't think that, like, there's a news cycle that comes with it, but I don't know if some of the talking heads, and listen, they'd be like, well, they're far more entitled to their opinion than any journalist around, and they've played for it and they played at World Cups, but I'm not sure if they're fully in tune with the terms and conditions under which Kenny has been judged, and just even to go, well, Martin Neal did this and so on, but it was a different time, you know, it was probably paid three times as much as well, you know, and there's a bigger FAI picture there that people can't get away from. And we'll see. Like, I mean, there is a good generation of players coming through that we've mentioned. The only thing I would say is, I'm not sure if we've enough evidence yet to say that that's definitely part of a broader success story, or is it just a good group coming together at once, if you know what I mean, that it's a blip. There's still on the ground, there would be criticism of some of Rue Docker's work and some unhappiness amongst, I say, the schoolboy football circle. So I'm not sure if we can definitively say at this stage that we're over the worst of it and what's coming through is definitely going to be good. I'm not so sure. I hope that, you know, that the case is that, you know, there are more coming through, but even you know, what we found is that we had that sort of good team a couple of years ago when they lost a penalty shootout to Holland, with the ridiculous one where the goalkeeper was sent off on penalties. I was at that game over in Chesterfield, and like, Troy Parrott was playing in that game, Adam Ida, Jason Knight was in that squad, Nathan Collins, who's going to be a very good player as well, another one we should mention, and a few others who've come through. But even the subsequent teams. And listen, David said he's involved with the 17, so I'm going to bow to him because he'll know the talent. But they maybe haven't had that impact. And in fairness, there's also been a suspension of like underage football and over the last sort of year or so. So we'll see. But we had a situation where Stephen in the 21s was taking the best players from the underage teams, and it was like a pyramid system working into the 21s, and it was working pretty well. But we'll just have to see if the depth is there going forward. There's a lot going on at the moment, and there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and a lot has come together at once. But Stephen, to be fair, did build expectation by speaking about what he could make the team do, and you know how he would sort of, this would be very different and an exciting new era. And I think that a lot of the criticism that he's getting is almost partially a response, as if to say, well, you know, you were naive to say that, you know, and you underestimated this job. And I think he's paid a good wedge. It's a high profile job.
Biggest job in the country.
The criticism comes with the territory, but I do think some of it has been reasoned, some of it has just been, well, they haven't won in 11, and not really looking into the reasons behind it.
Yeah, I was just asking myself that question this week, Johnny. Are the under 13, 15, 17 leagues and the connection with the League of Ireland, is this the right structure now to develop the young players for the future over the next decade?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, the League of Ireland has been very, very dysfunctional for a long time. And, you know, if John Delaney were in charge now, you'd wonder what reaction he would have to Stephen Kenny's troubles. Because the John Delaney era was obviously, you know, gross mismanagement. But the League of Ireland has been neglected for so long. And, you know, it didn't run its own affairs very well. And certainly the underage structure was almost non-existent for a greater part. And you were reliant on those schoolboy clubs. And as the lads are saying, there is a lot going on. It's going to take some time for us to develop a proper structure in this country, because we don't have it. We don't have a football industry in this country. We've exported our best players for years and years and years. That shouldn't be the case. We should have a proper industry where we have proper academies, where the young kids in this country can go to a local club and develop with players of similar ability, and, you know, not have to go to England at a very early age as they did. That's going to take time. I do feel, from watching the underage international teams in recent years, I think the progress has been great. We're benefiting from, you know, different social changes in this country as well, where we've had loads of immigrants come into this country. Their kids are now making a massive impact at underage level. And I was even watching this game in Athlone last night, between Galway and Athlone, and really observing these kind of, I guess, these mixed race kids coming through and making a massive impact at League of Ireland level. And you can see that through all the underage. And I think the future will be bright. The problem is, you know, we've gotten expectations from Stephen Kenny that there were great days ahead, and we've had a very, very bad run of results. And he's probably now cognizant of the fact that the job was maybe bigger than he thought, and that, you know, these young players will need more time. And I'm interested as well just what David thinks in terms of our place in kind of global football, because maybe, and this is a point that Stephen Kenny has made, is that, you know, when we had all these really good Irish players playing at the top level in England, it wasn't a globalised league back then. Basically, the players were British, Irish, a smattering of others, whereas now it's much, much harder for the Irish players to make an impact in England. And, you know, we have a struggle ahead, I think.
David, 3 minutes on that.
3 minutes on that?
Yeah, sorry.
I think it is difficult.
I have another question to ask him as well.
I've got this massive clock that you can't see, and it's by the second. So you never actually think that on the radio show, but I'm only half joking. Go on, David, sorry.
Johnny's right. If you look in the early 90s, right, when the Premier League kind of got founded and kicked on or whatever, like, it was mainly British and Irish. It was about 95, 96 when the French, the Spanish, you know, the Dutch all started dripping players in and out. So you kind of only really had the best part of 7-8 nations that were, Ireland was a big factor in that. But nowadays, it's a global league. You know, you see the stories of Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, picking these young kids up from, you know, South America, bringing them over. It's becoming more and more difficult. So we need to find a way that in Ireland, we can build up these, you know, kind of academies with the League of Ireland clubs. I get it, there will be fight back from the schoolboy clubs. But it's like, is there a way that we can get everyone together and in line? Because we need to develop more and more players. Like I was talking to my dad the other day, My dad's been heavily involved with Cork GAA for years. He's gone all the way down from like the 15s all the way up to senior level. But he was saying to me like that there, for him as a manager in the 15s, it's to bring one player through to the minor. But I kind of said like, well, that's wrong. You should be aiming to bring five or six players through. And that's what it was. It's like, we need to find a way that we can get all like as many players through as we can. It can't be just one, two, you know? I don't know how to find a way to structure it. I don't have the answers, but I definitely think conversations need to be had by people who, you know, who care, and, you know, obviously the important people who matter to make these calls, that the schoolboy clubs, the League of Ireland clubs, like the FAI, everybody works together. They're all singing off the same hymn sheet, and we can get as many players, you know, playing football at a high level.
Okay, yeah. David, Dan and Johnny, thanks so much for the moment. We're going to take a break back after the news with OTB Football Saturday. Don't forget, folks, that on next week's Paddy Power Half Hour, we're continuing with our new segment, Near Miss, aimed at allowing you to reclaim a losing bet. So if you've had a single bet or an accumulator that's fallen down just before you fling your phone at the wall, take a screen grab of your losing bet. Be sure to include your bet slip ID, then just send it in to us either using the PP Near Miss hashtag on Twitter, with a DM on Instagram, or send your snap to us on WhatsApp on 0879 180 180. We'll do the rest. We'll announce the selected winners every Friday at the end of the Paddy Power Half Hour. You can see all the T's and C's on otbsports.com, and stay tuned to our OTB social accounts for more. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Listeners, plenty of texts coming in on the Republic of Ireland. 53106 is the number. Back after the news with David Myler, Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward on OTB Football Saturday.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock. And because we're bringing you live commentary of Munster versus Toulouse from three, OTB Football Saturday is happening now, joined by the former Republic of Ireland international David Myler, the football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonald, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward, to talk about the beautiful game football on Off the Ball. Thanks to Paddy Power for information on responsible gambling. Visit gamblingcare.ie. An Irishman has scored at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea against West Brom. Guy Swindles.
Chelsea 1, West Bromwich Albion 3. Who would have seen this one coming? A fabulous finish from the substitute Callum Robinson. Well, could well have made sure that the points are secure as far as the baggies are concerned. They broke down the right-hand side, the cross came over, and it was just a wonderful volley from fully 15 yards that gave Mendy no chance in the Chelsea goal. Chelsea 1, West Bromwich Albion 3.
You got to listen to this show, because it's now 4-2 to West Brom, two goals in quick succession, and Callum Robinson scoring for West Brom. It's going to be a first defeat, it looks like, for Thomas Tuchel as Chelsea manager, the sending off of Thiago Silva in the first half not helping matters whatsoever. Just to go through some texts here on the Republic of Ireland, because as always, there's many of them. 53106 is the number if you want to get involved. Here we go. Had my son at Knocklyon United for 4 years. These clubs concentrate on the best team they have, and the rest of their teams get forgotten. He plays rugby now. For Terry Neuer, I have to say the coaching is far superior. The same can be said for any GA club. Football in Ireland needs to get its act together. That is from John. Elephant to the room is no one can finish. So many shots, a lot of players would have scored. Robinson, Brown, Malumbi, even the McLean goal was from a set piece. A well-worked one at that. But we need way more solid shots on target, and some will go in. Hi lads, good to see Andrew Omobe-Midele make his full debut for Norwich yesterday. Born in Leixlip, he was the club's man of the match in the draw against Preston. Once again shows there's plenty of green shoots, but it may just take a time for these lads to develop. Hi John, big problem with players missing or not at the top level from circa 92 to 98, I think, is because all those lads are now playing GAA and rugby. The GAA and rugby have completely left soccer in Ireland in the shadow regarding marketing. Young lads today wearing their county colours, the United Liverpool jerseys, aren't there like they were 15 to 20 years ago. Just an observation. Hopefully it's improving with this new generation. And mitigate, contextualise, and be as optimistic as you want to be, but call it as it is, says one of our texters. Rubbish football. 11 games consisting of terrible football, terrible results, and as a result of poor management. If results don't improve, how long do we wait and continue contextualising and making excuses? Sometimes the truth hurts, but don't stop telling the truth. The ex-pros are now fans and are calling it as we see it. Not good enough, says one of our texters. I think that's pretty harsh, David Myler. But it is important for Stephen Kenny to get the man management right, I think, over the next 6 to 12 months.
No, 100%. I was on and I said, there's no doubt Stephen's a good manager. He's been successful at Dundalk. But it's now a real test of his man management. You know, in the Luxembourg game, Serbia game, he went with the younger kind of lads rather than the experience of, say, Duffy, Brady, Hendrick, those fellas, even McLean. So then you've got like a lot of older lads in around the place. And look, they are kind of the driving force. They're the ones who set the standards in training, you know, then around the hotel. They look after all that stuff. They make sure the young lads are on top of everything. They're doing everything right. So obviously he wants to keep all of them on board, which they are on board. So that is important. So it will be a test of his man management skills, certainly, yeah.
I think that's an interesting point, John. I wonder, like, how will we look back on this treble header that even, you know, the game on Tuesday against Qatar, he put a couple of the more senior lads in that David mentioned. And I just wonder going forward, will there be more of a balance, you know, that even, you know, some of the younger lads, like, will they actually benefit from being on the pitch with some of those lads that, you know, that with them around them? I don't know what David's view on that during your career, like, how much did you take from being on the pitch with more experienced players? And so it's more of a phase transition than an overall transition. I think on reflection, you look to the Luxembourg game and the way the game that was, there was probably a lot of responsibility on the two central midfielders in terms of Josh Cullen and Jason Knight. And even Alan Brown ahead of them is a bit more experienced. But I think there was just a lot of responsibility on that area. And I think they just... It's no reflection on the individual ability of any of the players mentioned, because I think they're all going to be good players, but maybe collectively they just couldn't take a grip of the situation when they needed to. And I wonder would that be part of the regret of the week. It's not even that some of the players that David mentioned, it's not even that when they came in that they were like outstanding individually themselves in terms of what they did. And in fact, in some of them you can have question marks about their form. I still think Shane Duffy would have been hard to pick him after the run he's had, but I now accept the point that having some of them around for their presence, it's a strong argument. I don't know, David, in your career, did you always appreciate having senior players around you, even if they weren't necessarily all like at their absolute peak in terms of their performance?
No, I think it's massive. I'm a big believer in it, you know, that experience. Look, whenever I talk about Ireland, people always bring up the Germany game I played away, where I played right back. If you think it was a position I'd never played before. But I had John O'Shea, the right side of centre half, and I had John Walters in front of me. Two people I greatly admire and respect, you know, wonderful careers. You listen to them. You know, the whole game, I just remember John O'Shea, that is, just like up five, drop five, cross five, press, stay here, go out. He basically talked me through the game, and that was experience. You look at John O'Shea as a prime example. Why did he have such a long career at United? Because he was very versatile. He could play in so many different positions, and he built up that experience, and he literally talked me through that whole game. There was times when I came in, I was playing midfield with Glenn Whelan, and he would just talk you through it. He would just help you, like up five, drop five. Same thing as what John would do. Like, go, like, I'm going to run off, you drop in short, just little things like that. And that does go a long way to kind of getting that balance. You know, obviously once you play alongside a player for, you know, a long period, you kind of build up that relationship where I know what he's going to do. He knows what I'm going to do. Certainly when, you know, there's lads, can be young lads are brought in, it's nice to have that little bit of experience. And even, I don't know, was it after the game or before when the game started, O'Shea spoke and he said that he'd taken and learned a lot from Shane Duffy, even though he knew he wasn't playing. Forget about Shane's form. Shane has been around, like, he's played a lot of games. He's played a lot of games for Ireland. You know, he's played in big games for Ireland. He's played, you know, a lot. So he'll be able to help him. Whether or not Shane's form is kind of irrelevant in a sense, he'll be able to say, you know, when you're closing down, maybe do this. And that does help. And when you're, if you're, you know, we spoke about, the, you know, the sloppy possession losses, that's where you need, you know, the older experienced player to go, okay, just keep it simple. Next pass, 5 yards, you know, you win your tackle. Well done. You don't need fellas. And that comes with experience. So when you have those older lads, it is important. They do help you massively, yeah.
Getting out.
I think, go on. Can I just say a couple of the texts you got there, John? I'm very conscious of not making it a Dublin-centric thing because, in fact, we mentioned sort of the young Cork lad that we've had, like Eden, you know, Kelleher and a few. So, but sometimes this debate tends to fall along Dublin lines and some of those texts related to Dublin clubs. Like, I looked into this recently and said Dublin underage scene and stuff. There's no issues in terms of, I don't believe, with competing rival sports, like taking players away dramatically. I don't believe that's the case. I asked a number of people with schoolboy clubs in Dublin, you know, are they suffering a drop off? And they don't, like, you know, GAA in the city is still not penetrating inner city Dublin in great numbers. You know, rugby has its particular area. It's just that we, for whatever reason, like, we were still sending away players in that 1993, 94, 95, 96, in that bracket. Same number of players went away. They just weren't as successful. More of them came home. A lot of them dropped out of the game. And, like, that's the chance that we take with a system where you export a lot of your players. Like, you can't guarantee that everything's going to work out for them. And just, like, this whole coaching and schoolboy and League of Ireland thing, right? Like, what it comes back to is that you need the best coaches working with the best players. Like, there's a lot of debates in this country that they fall down on what crest someone is wearing or where they come from. Like, we've seen in recent times some movement from, say, you know, Alan Caffrey, who was running St. Kevin's, has now gone to Shelburne, for example, you know, in terms of their development. So it's not necessarily about where the club is. It's about where the best people are. And I think David made the cry there that people just need to work together. But for whatever reason, there's like a lot of distrust and historical distrust that comes from, you know, where people are coming from, a suspicion, whatever it might be of people. And I think the one thing everyone has to agree on is that you need, and it's the responsibility ultimately of the governing body, to make sure that players are getting to spend as much time as possible with the best coaches, that the people who are appointed the key jobs are the best coaches. And that's all you can do, really. And you feel that at times that hasn't necessarily been the case. And that's what needs to be addressed. But I don't believe sincerely that there's a whole generation of players that have been lost to other sports. I don't think that's the case. In fact, speaking to people, they would say that actually at the younger age groups, when it looks like they've got a chance with football, a lot of them will stick with it. I mean, Dara O'Shea was multi-talented. There's quite a few others who you know, there's not a huge amount of examples of players who walked away from the sport who could have been outstanding. There's a handful of anecdotal tales, but not too many.
Just on that text as well, JD, about Amoba Midele, I spoke to Alan Reynolds during the week, and he was raving about this kid, and this is before he made his debut for Norwich, and he's probably an interesting case in point in terms of his Nigerian and Irish parenthood. But he would have bypassed the League of Ireland, Kent to a league slip. I think he's at Norwich a couple of years now. An 18-year-old kid winning man of the match in his championship debut. It's absolutely sensational stuff. So there are these green shoots as well. It's just, I guess, we have to be patient.
53106. Do you think the team Kenny Pick versus Qatar is better, or at least better balanced in experience than the team versus Luxembourg? Would have been a better match for Luxembourg? Was Luxembourg debacle a result of Kenny putting pride before pragmatism and getting it wrong again, says Keith in Leash? And pick out the best 25 kids, put them all in the same League of Ireland team from their teenage years, then grow up together like Barcelona with the best coaches, pay them a decent salary from the FAI. They can't go to England or elsewhere until they're 21. We just want to move away because we're kind of running out of time, because we only got an hour today because of Munster Toulouse commentary from 3. Just on tonight, David, Arsenal-Liverpool. Liverpool, a huge week for them this evening's game because they're 5 points off Chelsea. I suppose the good thing for Liverpool is that Chelsea are losing 4-2 and likely to lose in the Premier League. But a big week for Liverpool. They got tonight, they got Real Madrid on Tuesday.
Yeah, no, it is. I think the international break will have done them good. I think I imagine Jurgen will probably give them some time off to spend with their families and kind of brought them back in once weren't in the international duty to kind of re-galvanise them. I'm expecting them to fully beat Arsenal. And like you said, it is important week. Chelsea, Liverpool will be fully aware of the result here and know that they can close the gap. Quite obviously surprised that Chelsea have gotten beaten like this. But obviously the 10 men hasn't helped. But I expect Liverpool to come through this game tonight. Arsenal are very hot and cold. You don't know what you're going to get, if they're going to turn up or not. But I'm expecting a kind of a reaction from Liverpool.
If they don't make the Champions League, will it affect in any way, do you think, their ability to sign the very top bracket of players, David? Or do they have enough credit in the bank for all the fantastic play they've given the fans and the trophies they've won in the last couple of years?
I don't think them being in the Champions League will matter too much. I think if Liverpool are, in my opinion, are one of the top 5-6 powerhouses in world football, along with the two Spanish giants, Bayern Munich, United City, you know, those kind of clubs. Paris Saint-Germain is another one. I think if Liverpool come after you and they want you, I think you're very interested, you're very intrigued, regardless of Champions League football or not. As you know, Liverpool aren't, if they miss it this year, right, if they do, which I still think they'll get Champions League football, but if they do miss it, you know they'll be back there next year. So, I you know, okay, it'll be 1 year. I don't think it will matter too much now.
We had the Pep Guardiola quote, which is quite funny. I don't know what is going to happen, but at these prices, we're not going to buy any striker this to replace Aguero. It's impossible. We cannot afford it. All the clubs are struggling financially, us as well. Today, there's more chance we will not buy a striker next season. Maybe he just doesn't want to be part of this parade about Haaland that seems to be going on. Every single big club in Europe is being shown Erling Haaland at the moment, David.
No, of course. Look, his record speaks for itself. The amount of goals he scored. He's one of the brightest prospects in the world himself. And Mbappe are the two that everyone is talking about. It's just quite interesting. Dortmund have come out and said he's not for sale, but yet Mino Raiola and his father are supposedly flying into every second different country, you know, having conversations. I do feel Pep's probably not letting too much on. I think if Man City really wanted to sign him, they could afford to sign him. You know, obviously, Aguero leaving would be the wages off the book there, which would more than likely cover his wages, $150 million. I'm sure Sheikh Mansour wouldn't mind writing a cheque for that. So I don't think it's too much of an issue.
Interesting match last night, lads. Rovers and Dundalk. Game of two halves, in a way. I thought Rovers were better in the first half, and Danny Mandry scored a lovely goal. And then Michael Duffy had a couple of chances in the second half. But the goalkeepers was a big thing, wasn't it, Dan?
Yeah, it was. It was quite enjoyable. I thought the first half was okay. I didn't think it was great, but the second half definitely had a lot more about it. The Dundalk played reasonably well, you know, but they have a problem. Certainly, they've. Alice, I don't, you know, you don't like to sort of, it's almost like encouraging a pylon, but they've signed the new. Gary Rogers retires, and they've you know, Giovagnoli has put his faith in Alessio Abebe, who's new to the league, new to the country, Italian Albanian goalkeeper. I mean, he had a bad mistake last week where, and it's just one of it's a modern goal for a goalkeeper to concede. You know, you get caught in possession, it happens. His shot stopping last night, even the Mandrew one didn't look great on first watch. Even in the stadium, it was like, what a goal! And you watch it back and think maybe the keeper could have been a bit better. But the second one was bad. And I think you have a situation where the Dock are piling on the pressure. And you could almost see from the reaction of other players that they'd worked so hard. They were sort of turning the screw a bit. They were really getting on top of Rovers, surprisingly so almost. And then Rovers sort of first attack in sort of five to 10 minutes and a shot that the keeper should save. And that's it. It's game over. So yeah, like I mean, it's a funny one, really. Like, you know, Rovers have won what you would think this is going to be a top two game, but I'm not sure if it even felt like that to some degree. We'll see how the season pans out. Like, I actually think Rovers have lost Jack Byrne and Aaron McAniff, and they're still very much finding their way. I think they can be so much better than what they were last night, but they've still beaten Dundalk, who are meant to be their main rivals. So I suppose the bottom line is what matters. But I'm kind of interested to see what happens in Dundalk now. You know, they've 1 point from three games. You know, big budget squad, issues in a couple of positions, and they play Bowes and St. Pat's in the next two games. So they need a response quickly enough, or else it just could get interesting there.
Are they clear favourites for the title, Johnny, from what you've seen so far?
Rovers?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's just a question of will anyone challenge them? I know Dan says they were turning the screw. I thought Rovers were comfortable for much of that game. I know Dundalk had chances, that's 1-0. You know, Graham Burke was outstanding. He was really a player of heart for much of the game, and he was taken off. Rovers didn't really improve after that, but I've been impressed by St. Pat so far. They play Bowes today, and I think for a title race to happen, this is maybe a little bit early to say, but I think Pats are the best kind of set up to challenge Rovers, if anyone's going to challenge them, because I think after last night, Dundalk have a mountain to climb, and I've been impressed with Pat so far. They had a massive win against Drogheda last week. Again, they wouldn't have won last season. Bowes have had a poor start, and I expect Pats to give it a really good go today. And it was interesting in Shamrock Rovers. I thought they made a better fist of it than Dundalk did. And, you know, it was a game of, you know, the Alan Manus did his job, Abebe didn't. But big question marks for Dundalk. You know, they've brought in a lot of players. They will need time, but they've given themselves a mountain to climb. I enjoyed the game, I have to say. I thought, I'm getting, you know, a little bit like everyone, I'm getting a bit fed up of games without crowds at this stage, and I think the government needs to start looking into letting limited attendances at games. I was in a game in Athlone last night, absolutely outstanding game of football. It was really sad that there was no one there to watch it, and I think, you know, it's badly needed. But I came back and watched the game back. Shamrock Rovers played some lovely football. It's a big season for Danny Mandrew. I think he accepted the responsibility that's on his shoulders a bit more last night. I think he had a good game, and I thought Rovers were comfortable, to be honest, in the greater part. I thought they kind of were in control of the game. And I think Dundalk will struggle to finish in the first three of the season, to be honest.
And Sligo Rovers are top, Dan. Liam Buckley, Sligo Rovers.
Yeah, no, they're decent. There's a very interesting young player there, Johnny Kenny. He's a 17-year-old striker who's... There's a lot of interest and excitement around him. He's just broken through this season. He's still in school. Son of Johnny Kenny, also of the same name. It's the John Egan sort of sporting tradition type thing, named after the dad. But yeah, and they've got good attacking players. They've, you know, and they have a sort of, they had some potential last year, and they've added to it in the right areas where they've strengthened quite well. So they could be okay. Yeah. And they play Shamrock Rovers next week. So listen, it's very early days in the season to be making firm declarations, although it's not going to stop my good pal Johnny from doing it. But I do see where he's coming from with the concerns with Dundalk. But I think it's like a Rovers that's going to be okay. I think the league could be more open initially anyway than in recent years. As I've just watched Callum Robinson score again here, by the way.
Oh, 5-2 now, is it?
5-2. How many did he score? Am I right? Did he score twice against Chelsea earlier in the season? Yeah. Yes. So it's almost like can we play you every week type thing going on. Like it's sort of a mad game, isn't it? Like that text in there about the forward players missing their chances, and you would like Callum Robinson at times during the games this week would frustrate you with his decision making and sort of certain things. The absolute confidence in the two finishes today. It just goes to show it's a mad game sometimes. Like the first one was perfect technique. The second one, he's just sort of dinked it over the keeper, put through. Okay, he had a fair bit of time, but it's still a bit of quality in how he executed it. It's sort of, listen, it's a funny game, isn't it? It's a mad one, really. Like he's got lots of ability, but God, there was at times in the Luxembourg game where you had opportunities and you wish you had the same composure, but there you go.
Yeah, David, I wonder if he'll be playing Premier League football next season. I wonder if he'll be looking for a move, or is it better for him to be regular in the Championship?
Ooh, it's a tough one. You just want him playing. Obviously, if he can play in the Premier League, that would be brilliant. It was funny because we were at the ad break and I was just chatting to Dan, like, and Callum scored the first one. It's a wonderful finish. And I said, where was that last week? Yeah. Was it? It was a beautiful goal. I'm a bit behind there. I've just seen the second one. Yeah, look, he needs to be playing football, regular football. He's not played a lot under Big Sam. That's the big thing. If he can get himself, I don't know, in the Championship. You've seen him when he first broke into the Ireland scene. He was playing with Preston week in, week out, and he was flying. Of course, he gets his move to Sheffield United. Didn't really work out. Goes to West Brom, gets promoted with them, and he's in the picture here. But you want to see him playing, I don't know, at least 30 of the Premier League games in a season. It is difficult for a forward, certainly when you play for a team that's at, you know, the bottom half of the table. You're not going to get a lot of chances. I don't know how many goals he's got this season in the Premier League, but he's got 4 against Chelsea, which isn't too bad.
I think that might be the only goals. I'm not sure if he's got another one.
We're doing the official check here now. As you speak. Okay.
Yeah, might have got one more.
Funny as well was the goal in Serbia. When you watch it back, like, it's a fairly straightforward goal. Obviously, Brown pings the ball outside the foot, that's grand. Robinson dinks it back, he's at the back post and heads it in. And like some of the reaction from like the Irish press was, this was the goal we've been waiting for. This is the Stephen Kenny football. And like anyone else watched it, like, yeah, it's a decent goal, but that's how impoverished we are in Ireland. Anything is amazing at this stage.
They're the only goals,
yeah, Chelsea, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he got a League Cup goal against Harrogate.
That is bizarre,
in September.
Isn't it? That is bizarre.
That doesn't count. Harrogate.
Four goals against Chelsea. With an Ireland coach now on the Chelsea bench as well too. Anthony Barry's thinking. Anthony Barry's coming in thinking this Robinson is going to light things up for us. He's the last.
We got some text in 5-3-1-6. Lads, Grealish and Ryland were the next generation. They've left Ireland high and dry. And a really funny one. Unfortunately, when I realised there's international week coming up, I get that same feeling I got as a kid when I realised it was budget day and there couldn't be any cartoons on, says one of our texters on 5-3-1-6. Eddie Howe for Celtic, David. Looks like it might happen. Would it be a good move for Celtic?
Look, Eddie Howe's played very attractive football at Bournemouth. I think that, you know, obviously the Celtic shot callers, I'll call them, they're the ones that like are looking at him. I thought, you know, Roy might get it. He went into, you know, favourite at the bookies. I was kind of hoping he did because I'd love to see him back managing, and certainly see him take over Celtic and, you know, push them would be good. But The question is, Eddie Howe, can he get them back to winning ways? We know that he's going to go there and get them playing good football. It's just a case of, will they be able to, you know, mount that challenge to beat Rangers?
They need a big revamp. Need a big revamp, don't they? Like a complete root and branch, probably.
No, they do, yeah. The squad is kind of... Look, they've had so much great success over the last 9 seasons under Brendan, under Neil Lennon. It was always going to hit a sticky patch. Obviously, as Dan said last week, I think it was Dan said, like, you know, the checkbook was open and they put, you know, spent a lot of money, and it's not, for one or another reason, it's not worked out. So obviously Celtic need to get back to winning ways.
Johnny was interestingly talking about there, the, you know, obviously trying to get crowds back here. What's the landscape at the moment in England? What's the environment there at the moment about getting some fans back in stadiums, or how are the fans over there? How restless are they?
Well, everybody's desperate, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think we're all fed up now. I remember, if you remember back at the start of the lockdown when the Bundesliga came back, I've never been so excited to watch, you know, Frankfurt v Hertha Berlin or something. But now I'm at a case where there's just too much football on. I think there's 5 games on the telly today, and then there'll be another 4 tomorrow. And it's just, like, as much as, like, I'm on Monday morning, which are known, I'll be talking them, or Tuesday, I think it's Tuesday morning, I'll be talking about the football, but you know, on a Sunday, you watch the 3 games, and by the time the 4th one comes around, I was just like, I can't sit down and watch this.
It is kind of shaping the narrative a bit, David, as well. Like, I definitely think some teams are struggling more. I know Liverpool have said, like, that they might be trying to look for excuses here, but I think even Stephen Kenny, like, an Irish crowd to will, you know, I think the Irish crowd are behind these young players, and, like, there was nothing there the other night. There was nothing there to lift them. All you had in the second half against Luxembourg when they needed, you know, some help was basically the sound of their own anguish on the pitch and probably the Luxembourg players getting kind of confidence. And it's probably not worked that much in our favour as well. And I think some teams are suffering because they've no crowd there, and it's just getting very sterile. I completely agree. Like, there's times now where I just not watch football because there's too much on.
I think you're missing as well. I think we're missing as well all the games being on at the same time sometimes too. And that sort of, like yesterday, I actually really enjoyed it with Sky Sports. Now they have the goals coming in with the Championship, so you had all the games going on at the same time. And it's actually, can you imagine even the top 4 race now if there was games going on simultaneously, or even the relegation picture? It's a made for TV event, understandably, because fans can't go to games. And I mean, they're making a big push in the summer around the Euros in England, aren't they? And there's, you know, talk around that and later in the season. But it's at the stage now where football it's been this way for a long time. And even the Champions League changes and stuff, but it's such a made-for-TV event now that's what it is. And the scheduling of games and the different kickoff times and everything, it's an extreme version of that now. But I wouldn't mind getting back to a Saturday afternoon where there's like 5 Premier League games going on at once, and there's all these storylines developing, as opposed to now, as you said, where it's like a 12-hour marathon almost some days, and by the 4th game you're just like, oh, right, do I really need to see this game now? I probably don't, to be honest.
Chelsea have lost, 5-2 to West Brom in the Premier League. So first defeat for Thomas Tuchel. And Huddersfield 1, Brentford 1 in the Championship. Lads, we're going to have to leave it there for our shortened OTB Saturday. Hope you have a great Easter Sunday and Monday.
Thanks, Judy.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks,
you too.
And
you too.
David Myler, Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward there. We're going to look ahead to our live commentary, Munster and Toulouse. We're going to speak to Keith Wood after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.